case number 032159, in order to give them a chance to be here. That's Constellation New Energy, Inc. versus the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio. Mr. Petrikov.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Howard Petrikov, and I represent the appellant, Constellation New Energy, and I would like to reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal. Constellation requests this court to vacate the Public Utilities Commission's order in the matter at bar, accepting a partial stipulation, and to remand the matter back to the Commission for further hearing and reevaluation in accordance with the statutory criteria. Simply put, the stipulation, as approved, is at odds with both the spirit and the letter of the Electric Restructuring Act passed by the General Assembly, Senate Bill 3, as codified in the revised code, as Chapter 4928. For decades prior to 2001, the manufacture and sale of electricity was a franchise monopoly within the state of Ohio. If you lived in Dayton, you had to buy your power from Dayton Power and Light. The service was a bundle service. That is, Dayton Power and Light supplied the generation, the transmission, and the distribution. And because it was a monopoly service, the Public Utilities Commission had to approve the prices and the service terms. And those were in a general contract with the public called the tariff. Everyone paid the tariff prices. And if there were some exceptional situations where you didn't pay the tariff price, you had to apply to the commission in a special contract, and that was approved. Changes in technology, in the economics of generation, and in the federal regulation of transmission caused the General Assembly to pass Senate Bill 3. And as part of Senate Bill 3, they removed generation as a monopoly service. Transmission would now be regulated under the regional transmission organizations, which are going to be regulated and are regulated by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, and the wire service, the distribution, remains a franchise monopoly, and that is regulated by the Public Utilities Commission. The stipulation in the matter at bar has three flaws, which make it unreasonable, unlawful, and illegal. The first is that it's anti-competitive. And anti-competitive is a strong charge because Senate Bill 3, and you could find this in Section 49.28.02G, says that we are now moving to a competitive system, and the Commission has to make sure that things are competitive. But the stipulation creates this new service called a Rate Stabilization Service, an RSS. And under the Rate Stabilization Service, Dayton Power and Light is permitted to charge customers who buy power from someone other than Dayton Power and Light for certain fuel and environmental costs. In other words, if a customer buys generation from the appellant, from Constellation, they would have to pay Constellation for their fuel and their environmental charges. But in addition, they would have to pay an extra amount to DP&L under this rate stabilization charge. That, of course, causes, it's a barrier to competition because the new competitors their customers have to pay this charge, and those that stay on the standard service rate with the utility do not.
But that's built in the statute, what you've just described.
No, that's, Your Honor, you can look through all of Chapter 4928. There is no provision for a rate stabilization fee. What the statute does provide, and you'll find this in Section 49.28.14, it says that the default electric rate should be based at market rates. And then it goes on to say in Section B that there should be an auction to determine what these rates are. So if Dayton Power and Light was buying power on an auction and charging the customers what the generation costs, then there would be no reason for a rate stabilization fee. Hence, there is no rate stabilization fee in the chapter. What the stipulation does is the stipulation basically says that we're going to continue the old utility rates that the commission set which are not market-based. And then because that's going to be insufficient in terms of revenue, we're going to allow Dayton Power and Light to charge not only the customers who take that power, but all customers for certain fuel and other expenses. And they come back in and show us what you've paid and we'll let you charge it. That's anti-competitive, and that's not in the statute. There are, that is most pernicious. That rate stabilization charge is by far the most pernicious aspect of the stipulation in terms of being anti-competitive. But there's others. I just want to mention one by name, and I won't go into the detail. And that is the rate stabilization starts, the rate stabilization fee starts January 1st, 2006, when the market development period is over. That's when we're supposed to be in the open market period. Prior to that, the company in its application asked that there be an extension of the market development period. And the key there is that during the market development period, the utility company is allowed to charge transition costs to help it financially get into the new market. When they extended the rate stabilization period, the market development period, they extended the payment of those fees. Now, they gave it another name, but from the customer's perspective, the customer who's buying power, they pay the same amount in addition to the distribution fees to Dayton Power and Light, both before and after the original market development period. And this is important because the statute, 492837, states that these transition fees are supposed to be quantified and paid in dollars. And the rates were set so that they were paid out after 3 years. And those 3 years are over. So if DP&L is continuing to collect them, they're collecting more than the statute says they're entitled to, unless there's a showing that they need more money. And this brings me to the other aspect I want to talk about, and that is the way this agreement came to be approved. First, it's important to note that the whole agreement is not before the commission. The commission has the stipulation, and the stipulation says it's the whole of the agreement. But as you'll note in our reply brief on page 6 and in the transcript in our appendix of the deposition, DP&L admits that there are other sidebar agreements that are out there. The commission simply cannot do its task of accepting a stipulation if it doesn't know all the aspects. Those must be produced and the commission must review them. The other aspect I want to talk about in terms of process, normally, when DP&L comes in and they want to have a rate increase or they want to set up a post-market development program, they have to file an application. And that was done in this case. And then it is the burden on DP&L in order to prove their case that they must show that this is reasonable and in line with the statutes. The day before the trial was going to begin, a number of the parties, but not all the parties, most importantly, not the Ohio Manufacturers Association and not the independent marketers, met in a secret meeting, came up with a stipulation, and filed this partial stipulation. That is where this rate stabilization fee and program first came to light. The commission at that point then evaluated the stipulation under its three criteria. So it didn't go in and to look into the statutory standards, and that was wrong.
Counsel, the rate stabilization fee, is that unique to DP&L and unique to this case, or are they doing that with other electric utilities?
Each of these cases are done separately. And they have something similar that's been proposed in the other cases. There has been something similar approved in the First Energy case, but it was coupled with an auction, and the auction comes first.
Is this related to generation costs, or is it system-wide costs, the rate stabilization? What are they looking at in terms of?
The rate stabilization charge is basically a charge that it would be charged against all customers. And it is, as it is formed, it is collected, set up to collect certain fuel, environmental expenses, and other costs associated with generation. These are generation-only costs.
So the act is, I understand that when it was originally enacted, It contains certain provisions, or it asked the commission to get over to a more market approach, but it was dealing with a variety of utility companies who had differing problems with their existing generation. Some was old, some had enormous environmental tail associated with it. Some was, you know, some companies had a more efficient generation structure in place at the time of this conversion than others. Now, that was to be provided forth through another, I don't remember the acronym, but there was something else that was to take care of that. And so is this being layered on top of, because the companies claim they underestimated the tail of their responsibilities with respect to generation, or what is it?
Yeah. The quick answer, Your Honor, is yes. This rate stabilization charge is in addition to the transition charges.
Right.
There were regulatory transition charges and generation transition charges.
And that was to smooth out.
And that was to smooth out. And the statute, the General Assembly was very clear. That was ended when the commission says it needed to be ended.
Right.
But no later than December 31st, 2005.
So
this rate stabilization fee starts January 1st, 2006, after we're supposed to be done with transition and into the market-based rates only.
So your argument is this is transition, a little like Little Red Riding Hood's grandmother. Dressed up in a different cloak.
That's exactly right. We're saying that one, the stipulation which continues the existing utility rates is wrong because they're supposed to be market-based rates, and two, this rate stabilization thing is definitely wrong because it's not called for the statute, and it's there basically to finance continuation of this utility rate, which is not supposed to exist after January 1st, 2006.
And that, in your view, would then meet the qualification, because you have to get through a fairly high standard for us to find.
Well, that's right. But once you can show that the commission is outside the statutory framework and not following the statute, I think we're there in terms of meeting that standard about unjust and unreasonable. The commission is an agency. It has only the authority that is delegated to it. It cannot go off and do something that it contrary to what the General Assembly has told it, even for the best of intentions. I want to finish up here because I want to do reserve some time for rebuttal and talk about relief. What is the relief that we're asking for? We are not asking for the court to redesign this or to make the decisions on what the default charges should be after the market development period. The appellant only asks that the order be vacated and remanded back to the commission with instruction, one, that they look at all of the agreements, because you can't rule on a stipulation unless you look at all of the agreements, the totality of the compensation, the tit-for-tat that's gone into the stipulation. And then compare the stipulation against the statutory scheme and make these findings, these necessary findings, in the case of 49-28-14, that you don't have an auction because you have other market options, and in the case of 49-28-37, that in fact Dayton Power & Light needs more transition monies.
Mr. Petrikov, wouldn't that be rather unusual, if not extraordinary, for us to order the commission to somehow put on the record the understandings and so forth that went into a stipulation? I mean, with any stipulation, there are obviously understandings. People give up and they change their positions, and we have a stipulation, a written stipulation. Why is this unique? Why is this situation unique?
Well, what's unique here, Chief Justice, is that let me go back a step. What's unique here is that the commission didn't look as to how the stipulation was going to be implemented. We have never asked and do not ask today to know what the motives were or the negotiations. What we want to know are the facts on the ground. on day one, when this takes forward, what will be the payments back and forth? What will be the agreements between the utility company and all of its customers? Are some customers being treated different than others? We don't want to know why they're being treated different than others. We're telling the commission you have to know if they're being treated different than others. And that's not unusual for the court to order this back, because the court, through a long list of cases listed in both our brief and the appellee's, has said that before the commission can accept a stipulation, it has got to ask, does this violate any regulatory principles? And you don't know if it's violated any regulatory principles unless you know how it's going to be implemented. So if there are side agreements that are going to affect how it's going to be implemented, even if the commission doesn't know how it's going to be implemented, first, shame on them if they don't know how it's going to be implemented. How can they make those determinations? That's what you need to send it back to them for, to make sure that they understand exactly how this is going to be implemented. And if there are sidebar agreements, and the fact that the other side is asking, is defending not producing the sidebar agreements because they're privileged or irrelevant, lets you know that we're talking about sidebar agreements that are out there. Courts can handle whether it's privileged or relevant. With that, unless there are any other questions, I would like to reserve the remainder of my time for
rebuttal.
Thank you. Thank you.
Counsel for Appellees, you have discrete separation of time. The red light will light at the end of Mr. Wright's arguments and at the end of Mr. Faruqi's arguments, so that you know that's the end of the time you've been allotted. We have 18 minutes total. Mr. Wright.
May it please the court, my name is Bill Wright. I represent the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio in this matter. I would also like to acknowledge at council's table the presence of Charles Faruqi on behalf of Dayton Power and Light, and Paul Colbert on behalf of intervening appellee, the Cincinnati Gas and Electric Company. I would like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for Mr. Faruqi. I would like to start, Justice Moyer, in responding to a question. Isn't this unusual that sidebar agreements, if any, are being requested? And the answer is absolutely. Contrary to counsel's assertion, it does go to motive. People negotiate and an ultimate deal is reached. That is all that was before the commission in this case. Nothing more, nothing less. That's all the commission could approve, and that is all the commission could enforce. And I might also add that there have been no complaints whatsoever raised about the implementation of the stipulation. To suggest that this is a case, an anti-competitive case, is different than what I read in the appellant's briefs. This is a case about a stipulation that is actually pro-customer and pro-competition, if I may explain. And I think it's interesting that Constellation is attacking a stipulation that's very pro-customer. The stipulation itself does extend the market development period, and by law it must. 4928.40 says that unless the commission can find effective competition or 20% shopping, that it must extend the market development period. The commission could make neither of those findings. Ergo, the market development period was extended, and by law, frozen rates that were then in effect were extended for an additional 2 years to the end of December of 2005. The statute requires that. The commission didn't change anything. In the post-market development period, which is where Constellation's focus seems to be, the commission approved a market-based rate that included this rate stabilization surcharge to be applied for the period 2006 through 2008. The commission found that to be market-based. The reasoning is that it tends to track various types of costs that one would expect to see in a market rate. But I would like to remind the court that the only issue in this case relative to the rate stabilization charge is who pays it. There was no assertion by Constellation that charge itself is not market-based, and in fact, we're now talking about something that doesn't even exist. We're talking about who will pay a charge that is zero. And I would suggest to you that we may be a little ahead of the game in taking that issue up at this time. In any event, Constellation is not prejudiced because they don't pay that rate, nor do they provide default or provider of last resort service as Dayton by law is required to provide. And it's for that provision of service that the commission found the rate stabilization surcharge to be
appropriate. Well, counsel, help us understand who pays. Perhaps I'm not understanding their argument. I believe their argument is that customers who choose them as an alternative source of power would be forced to pay the rate. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
But you say it would be zero.
There is no rate at this point in time. There can be no rate stabilization surcharge until January 1, 2006, and there cannot be any rate stabilization surcharge then unless and until Dayton Power and Light applies for one, they prove their case, and the commission approves it. So we're talking about something that may never even occur.
Okay. I guess what I'm worried about is procedurally the commission, and you've seen me write about it, keeps knocking down opportunities to contest their actions because it's not ripe yet or it's premature. But then by the time it is mature, it's too late because everything's in place. You didn't argue that procedurally they didn't have the right to be here and raise this issue at this point in time.
Well, I believe we suggested in our brief, Your Honor, that taking up that issue would be premature at this time, but I'd like to answer your question more directly, if I may. The commission found, and again, the only issue before the court today is who pays the charge. And the commission found that charge is properly payable by everyone because it compensates Dayton for provider of last resort service, which by law it must provide. But the commission also found important
That would be anti-competitive, though, wouldn't it?
Oh, not at all, Your Honor. Quite to the contrary. It's not anti-competitive at all. It's actually competitively neutral. All customers pay the charge. It does not impact the price to compare. It does not advantage Dayton in the least. All customers pay the charge. So that should not influence their decision to shop or not. There's no anti-competitive effect about it whatsoever. And in fact, the commission noted that all parties to the stipulation approved that charge and the fact that all customers would pay that as one component of the overall stipulation. And I think it's worthy to note the composition of the parties to that.
I'm having trouble with the theoretical math here. You're charging, the commission has authorized a charge on all customers. So the electric that the appellant here furnishes gets a surcharge that goes on the to their customers, or their customers get this surcharge that goes to DP&L, who's trying to compete with them. So how is that not an advantage to DP&L?
The commission found, as a matter of fact, that this charge, the rate stabilization surcharge, is intended to compensate Dayton for a different type of service. 4928.14 imposes upon Dayton Power and Light default service. If customers shop in return, Dayton has to be ready to serve them instantaneously. The record reflects, and it's not disputed, the record reflects that there are costs and risks associated with having to provide that service. The commission found that this charge will properly compensate Dayton for those costs and risks. The General Assembly assuredly did not create a statutory obligation and then say you cannot be compensated for it. I would submit to you that had the commission done anything else, I would be looking at Mr. Faruqi on probably on the other side of the aisle on that one, and defending against a constitutional taking claim. That assuredly is not the case. But the point I'd like to drive home today is very simply, this is a charge that may never be implemented by Dayton. If it is implemented, it's capped, and the commission will be the one to determine what the final rate is. The commission will continue to monitor the marketplace to ensure that rates in the stipulation remain market-based, and if something should happen that the market comes up with a better rate, under the stipulation, the commission can terminate the whole arrangement and send everybody out to the marketplace. It's important to note here that 4928A, the policy statute, speaks in terms of consumers, not competitors. And it specifically directs that the commission implement Chapter 4928 to correct and protect consumers against market deficiencies. And that's precisely what we had in this marketplace. This is an admittedly immature marketplace. There's no question about it. We would like to see, the commission would like to see more participants in that marketplace. And the stipulation, through higher shopping credits, through stable rates, invites Constellations and other competitors out there to step up to the plate. If the economics are right, they will do that. The General Assembly did not intend 4928 as a mechanism to allow competitors a leg up in that marketplace. I would like to, if there are no more questions, I'd like to reserve the balance of my time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wright. Mr. Faruqi.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Charlie Faruqi for the intervening appellee, Dayton Power and Light Company. Let me address two issues. First of all, the issue of these sidebar agreements that my colleague on the other side has said are out there. What's the record here? The record, Your Honors, is that there was one sidebar agreement, not a whole bunch of them, one, and it was produced. The record reference in the DP&L supplement is page 463. What you see at page 463 is that on June 27 of 2003, the one sidebar was produced. It was between Dayton Power and Light and two residential consumer groups. It was given to them. What did they do with it? They're telling you it's very important. What did they do with it? The answer is nothing. They didn't attach it to a motion to reopen the hearing. They didn't attach it to a motion for rehearing. And they didn't even put it in the record before you. So when you look at the document, and what I'm pointing to in the DP&L supplement is the letter from our firm that said, here is the sidebar. And what you see is that that letter says, quote, there is only one responsive document, end of quote, to the discovery request. Once they got it, they didn't even put it in the record. They didn't make it a ground for rehearing. In their brief, their initial brief, because they've changed positions, in their initial brief, they conceded that there was, that the only thing they sought was sidebar agreements between the parties to the stipulation. That's at pages 7 and 8 of their brief.
Counsel.
Yes, Your Honor.
The underlying practical implementation of this so-called competition legislation, are residential or small business customers shopping around or doing it? Are we talking here essentially about cherry-picking your largest industrial customers?
What has happened in DP&L's service territory so far, Your Honor, is that there is almost no shopping among residentials. There is some shopping among the large industrial customers. I believe it is their plan to represent large industrial customers. What we have here on appeal to you is an order that approves, as a factual matter, a stipulation signed by every customer, by representatives of every customer class. Their brief argues to you, based on dictum in this court's Time Warner opinion, that this case is just like Time Warner. It isn't. This is a competitor, not a customer, coming in saying, you should upset this because we weren't at the bargaining table. When you look at the chronology that's in our brief of the settlement discussions, at the end of the April 22 pre-hearing conference at the commission, you'll see I stood up and said, if there are parties that want to talk settlement, we, counsel for the company and representatives of the company, are going to wait here to do that if anybody wants to. They didn't want to. We were preparing the case for hearing when Consumers Counsel, Office of Consumers Counsel, called us and said, we would like to talk to you again. What rule are they contending for? Your Honor, I see my time is up. I'll conclude this way by saying that they are contending for a rule that everyone has to participate in every settlement meeting.
Mr. Faruqi, I have one quick question I'd like you to address, if you would. On the rate stabilization service, if I understand the argument correctly, they're saying that there will be a fee charged to all consumers, a portion of which will go to Dayton Power and Light. Do I understand that correctly?
All of the amount would go to Dayton Power and Light, but with that amendment, your statement is correct as to what they're contending and as to the
fact. Could you just address that argument for me, please?
Yes, Your Honor, I will. What the commission found here as a finding of fact in its opinion and order is that the rate stabilization charge was necessary to compensate DP&L for what the Attorney General called correctly default service. In other words, 4928.14 requires DP&L to stand ready to serve a customer in its service territory if that customer switches to another supplier, such as Constellation, and that supplier defaults. You don't want people to be without power, so if somebody goes bankrupt or cannot serve, DP&L has to stand ready. That means it has to have generation available to serve not only the people it's presently serving, but any switchers who want to come back.
Thank you.
And that's the basis for that charge.
Well, it doesn't exactly mean that in today's world, does it? DP&L can go into the marketplace and buy, and I assume you buy and sell presently.
It can buy generation power and does, Your Honor.
Okay, and so if you had a large industrial customer, heavy user, come back to you that you had lost to these folks, and that represented something that taxed your ability to generate with your existing generation capacity, you could go into the marketplace. Now, maybe it would be an adverse market at that point in time. So does this cover that as well?
Yes, it does, Your Honor. You're exactly right. That last comment, in essence, answered the question that you were asking, because this charge covers that as well. And I'll offer you again, in the DP&L supplement, a couple of page references, pages 403 to 405 and 446 to 447. Those are the concessions by their witnesses on cross-examination in the record that DP&L indeed, as the commission found, incurs these type of costs. In the face of that, and this is my concluding comment, unless there are any other questions, Your Honors, what you have here is a brief, and if you look at pages 19 to 20 of the Constellation brief on this point, there is not a single record citation, not a single one. Your Honors, for these reasons, we ask that you affirm. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Faruqi. Mr. Colbert. And my clock says you have 35 seconds, but I'll give you more than that since you were given 3 minutes.
Thank you. If it please the court, I'm Paul Colbert representing the Cincinnati Gas and Electric Company. CG&E agrees with the results of the commission's order in this case, but we disagree with the legal standard applied by the commission to reach those results. 4928.05 states that a competitive retail electric service supplied by an electric utility shall not be subject to the supervision and regulation of the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio. That is precisely what the appellant and the commission propose in this case. CG&E asserts that the commission has no jurisdiction to determine the market rate charged by a utility for any competitive retail electric service. The commission properly found that the market rate charged by DP&L, in this case represented by the rate stabilization surcharge that's been the subject of the discussion, is not discriminatory or anti-competitive. Pursuant to 4928.05, that is the extent of the commission's jurisdiction in this case. The commission does not have the ability to require a utility such as DP&L or CG&E to charge any particular market price. Having determined that the price is not discriminatory or anti-competitive, the commission must permit the implementation of the market-based standard service offer application as just and reasonable under 4909.18. This case and the cases to follow involving each of Ohio's electric utilities is not a traditional rate case where the commission has authority to establish rates pursuant to the rate-making formula under 4909.15. The commission's authority is limited by 4928.05, which divests the commission of rate authority over all competitive retail electric services except to determine whether the pricing is below cost for the purpose of destroying competition pursuant to 4905.33b, or whether the service is discriminatory pursuant to 4905.35.
So the discriminatory part would come in when you're saying, well, and you're arguing this is the first case to get here, this is a big case, need to tell the commission they're out of this game, except for the standard of, articulate that standard again.
Certainly, Your Honor. First, the answer, the basic answer to your question is yes. That's exactly what we're arguing in this case, and we do believe this is a big case. The specific statutory standard requires an application for a market-based standard service offer under 4928.14 to be filed with the commission under 4909.18, which articulates a just and reasonable standard for approval. If it's just and reasonable, then the commission must approve the application. If not, it sets it for hearing, and amendments can be made to make it just and reasonable. Traditionally, under the old regime, we followed the rate-making formula set forth under 4909.15 and related statutes. Now the legislature has expressly stated in 4928.05 that the commission has no jurisdiction to set the price for generation service, for any competitive service.
But you argue at the same time or agree with DP&L that even though the commission is out of this, with the exceptions, that under the deregulation and the structure under which others can provide power to be wheeled by DP&L, that there is authority for DP&L or your company to tack on a surcharge to the customer that they're providing the electric, the source of the electric.
Your Honor, 4928.14, the statute at the core of this case, requires essentially each utility to provide two types of services. One is default service, as counsel right. for the commission mentioned, what's known as provider of last resort service. The statutorily, the utilities have to stand by so that anybody who is defaulted by a provider or who voluntarily returns because their contract ends or for whatever other reason can get electric service, generation service from the utility.
Okay, let me turn it around. Would an alternative way under the deregulation for the customer who leaves, then comes back, and that's what this surcharge is for, is to cover the cost to the incumbent company. Would an alternative to your company in terms of your rate structure, say, look, when you come back, we may not have the capacity to handle you, and we may have to go into the marketplace. And so if you're returning, we can tack on any necessary surcharge to you, unlike the rest of our customers, that it's costing us to provide you this service, because we hadn't anticipated that part of the load.
That's a good question, and there's a pretty straightforward answer to it. There are many ways to structure a market rate. The Commission has made its preference known for what it has called a rate stabilization plan, that is to provide relatively stable rates from the utility to customers. Now, the utilities, including DP&L in this case, have agreed to provide that market service, and they've priced that service accordingly. They have what you heard Mr. Wright refer to as a price to compare, that is the rate that they charge directly for generation, that is a relatively stable rate during the entirety of the rate stabilization period, in this case through the end of 2008. And then you have the additional costs of standing by to provide service to anybody who might return. The legislature has determined that that also is part of the market rate. So the rate stabilization surcharge that covers, in this case, some specific costs that DP&L will incur over that rate stabilization period is simply the market price that DP&L wishes to charge for standing by, and is exactly in accordance with the statute enacted by the legislature. In fact, what Constellation is asking is that the entirety of that charge be bypassed and placed on only those customers that are served directly by DP&L. And if that is permitted, either the rate must go up so that those customers subsidize all other customers the benefit that they're getting for default service, or DP&L's shareholders have to sacrifice and not collect the costs of providing that service at all. Both of those possibilities are in conflict with the statute. 4928.02G specifically says that there should be no subsidies flowing from the competitive market to the non-competitive side, or from the non-competitive side to the competitive market. So the
you need to sum up, Mr. Colbert.
I will do so, Your Honor. The bottom line is that the market price charged by any utility should be permitted and only judged based on the discriminatory and anti-competitive standard in the statute. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Colbert. Mr. Petrikoff, you saved 2.5 minutes of your time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel, let me ask you, just you heard this last argument, which sort of turns your argument around, that is the customers who stay with the incumbent company, if this charge isn't spread among all customers, including those who leave, the customers who stay with the incumbent company would ultimately be subsidizing the cost of providing backup service. Yeah. And let me include in that question, are you arguing there's a better way to do it? That is, the customers that you drain off should face the potential of paying more than the incumbent company's customers if they come back, if that's what it takes to go out and acquire electric to service their needs?
Well, the quick answer is no. We did not advocate a policy to take this to replace what's been offered. So I think that council was incorrect in that, in saying this is what they're offering and this will be the effect of it. We asked only that it be remanded. And we asked it be remanded under the standard. And the standard is, and on this I think there's agreement from both the appellees and the appellants, all of them, that the rates have to reflect the cost of service. I mean, that's one of the principles. Any utility rate's got to reflect the cost of service. And I want to read you from the order of the commission. You'll find this on page 35 of our appendix. And this is the commission addressing this RSS charge. It says, while the commission is not finding that the costs specified in the stipulation as the basis of the RSS are Polar. Now, Polar is the provider of last resort charges that we're talking about, which is the has been tagged as the reason for the RSS. So the commission says, well, we're not finding that they are Polar costs. The commission does find the existence of Polar costs makes it reasonable to apply the RSS to all customers. And what we are arguing today is that, one, you can't charge until you know what those Polar charges are. And so when the commission says that we're not finding that the RSS charges are Polar charges, on that alone is grounds for remand, because we should only be charging it. When you look at the facts, it is clear that they're not. And this is why, I guess, Mr. Colbert may wonder which side of the table to sit on. The charges in the RSS are for fuel and environmental expenses for generation. If you don't take the generation, you aren't going to cause those charges. If, in fact, a customer comes back, you can charge the customer whatever it is to supply them. And if you are charging a default rate that is market-based, that's exactly what you will charge. There may be other expenses out there that should be socialized and paid by everyone to have a safety net. If those are presented when this case is remanded and charged against everyone, that would be fair. What we're saying is that the RSS is not that charge, and that the commission itself says that they make no finding that these RSS charges are provider of last resort charges. That's why it must be remanded. One quick point in terms of Mr. Faruqi's letter that he pointed out in a supplement claiming that there are no sidebar agreements except for the one that they were proffered. The deposition that was asked, the questions that were asked at the deposition where the witness was instructed not to answer, was the totality, what agreements are out there. The notice of the deposition said to bring to the deposition those agreements that were with the signatory parties. The self-serving letter that's in the supplement from Mr. Faruqi's law firm basically says there's only one contract that is between the Dayton Power and Light and one of the signatory parties. But the signatory parties are trade associations, and there are members that may have the individual deals, and that's where the deposition was going when the witness was ordered not to answer. So we want to reopen the deposition and continue down that track.
You need to sum up, Mr. Petrico.
I'm sorry.
You need to sum up.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. Basically, we've asked that the case be remanded because of these irregularities concerning the rate stabilization charge and the fact that the full record was not before the commission when the commission made its decision that, as it must in a stipulation, that the stipulation was in the public interest and it didn't violate any rules. If it does get sent back now for remanding, particularly on the rate stabilization, which is the most pernicious.
You've used your time.
Yes. The effect is not until 2006.
Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.
Thank you, Your Honor.